Now to our interview with former Iranian journalist Nazila Fati, who's just written a book about her escape from Iran in 2009. By the time of the 2009 election protests, which were brutally crushed by the regime, Ms. Fati had become the longest-serving journalist to work for a foreign outlet in Iran as the reporter for the New York Times, and she decided to defy a government order not to report on the demonstrations. The decision would see her pay a high price. She fled Iran with her husband and two very young children 5 years ago and has not returned even when her father had a heart attack. But she says she has no regrets. Nazila Fati spoke to me from New York about her book, The Lonely War. Nazila Fati, you write that when you decided to become a journalist in Iran, you knew you'd be putting yourself at risk. Was it worth it in retrospect?
I don't know. That's a difficult question. A lot of things that we were doing in Iran, young girls who had grown up under the Islamic Republic, were doing things that were risky. I mean, we always tried to defy the kind of clothes that we wanted to wear. We defied the rules at school. We defied the rules on the street. So taking risks was pretty much part of life.
It's interesting you write about the way the regime controlled women, that it even extended to the colours of the clothes that you could wear. I mean, what was that like for you?
Extremely suffocating. I mean, of course, we had two lives. We had a private life inside the home. It's the first thing that we did when we entered a private space was to take off the headscarf. But just following the rules on the streets and the public life was also quite difficult. They just wanted to create a kind of homogeny.
So you took this risk, you became a journalist. Were you aware when you began working as a journalist just how much government surveillance you were under?
I assumed that my phone was tapped. I assumed that the drivers who took us around, they reported on us. I was very conscious that wherever we were going, we were being watched. When I started working, I was summoned by the intelligence ministry. And I had to go through an interrogation at least twice before I was allowed to work. And every time that I wanted to work, I had to get a special permit.
How did it affect what you wrote and reported?
One of the first things that I learned was that when I was writing about something, especially when it came down to the time when I started reporting under my own byline, I was very aware that whatever I was writing about, I had to have a reliable source, government official. I knew I was safe. I always rely on sources who would stick to what they had said.
How frightened were you the first time you realized you were on a government blacklist?
It was a little bit tricky because I was being monitored by the Ministry of Intelligence. I was very cautious not to get on their blacklist. But there were also other blacklists run by other parallel groups, especially the one that the Revolutionary Guards had, or the judiciary had its own blacklist. For me, the most terrifying thing was to get on the blacklist of the other two groups. And about 10 months before I left the country, I started getting some strange visits from people with the Revolutionary Guards. And it was then that I thought I was on their blacklist.
Why did you fear the Revolutionary Guard more than the security and intelligence services?
Because they were the ones who were doing things that were scary, like picking up reporters and jailing them, keeping them in detention centers where nobody knew where they were, detaining people without an arrest warrant. It's exactly the same case with Jason Rezaian now, with the Washington Post correspondent who's been arrested for over 6 months now. The assumption is that he's been held by the Revolutionary Guard, and nobody's saying why he's been arrested. That was one thing that I thought was the worst thing that could happen to any of the dual nationals who worked for a Western news organization.
What do you fear could have happened to you if you hadn't escaped in 2009?
Well, unfortunately, I have no doubt that they would have arrested me. I mean, what I learned after I left the country was that about 2 days after I had already left the country, they had an arrest warrant to come and pick me up.
You were also being spied on by your nanny. What sort of stress did that put you under?
I was okay with her spying on me because I thought it was a good thing that she was watching very closely what I was doing and reporting to the authorities, because I wasn't doing anything wrong. I wasn't doing anything that they could charge me with. But what became very dominant, very frustrating, was that she became a little bit out of control. she would come on the weekends when she was not supposed to come, on holidays when we were not expecting her to come. When I asked her to leave, she wouldn't leave. She would stay until late into the evening. When I had friends over, especially colleagues who came over to talk with me, she insisted to stick around, and a couple of times I found her hiding.
Now, by the time of the 2009 demonstrations, when more than 3 million Iranians flooded onto the streets to protest against the election results, you'd become the longest-serving journalist working for a foreign outlet, the New York Times. You had two very young children, and you decided to defy the government order not to report on the demonstrations. How much danger did that put you in?
I didn't realize at the time, Eleanor, when people come out in such great numbers, the crowd radiates a strange energy and you don't think about the danger. So at the time, I thought that these people are going to make the regime back down. I didn't think that the regime would go after them so violently and so fiercely and crush them. So I just went out and I kept on covering. Even when I received a phone call from a commander who knew me, he was warning me that they'd given my picture to snipers to shoot me if they saw me on the street.
So the government had given your photograph to snipers and you weren't scared?
I didn't believe him. I thought he was trying to intimidate me. I didn't think they would shoot a reporter for the New York Times on the streets. But when my house came under surveillance, I suddenly realized how scared the regime was from the coverage. They were so determined to stop the reporting that they were willing to take any measure. It was very clear that the regime was totally embarrassed about the protest, and they didn't want the outside world to hear about it.
When you fled Iran in 2009, you say that you expected it to be just for a few weeks. Do you now think you'll ever return?
Unfortunately, I haven't gone back. Last year, my father was very ill. He had a heart attack. And I wanted to go back. I started making phone calls to people I knew, but nobody could guarantee that I would be safe. And some of them even told me in a very friendly way that it was best if I didn't go back. I have no regrets. I loved what I did, and I think I did the right thing.
How hard is the prospect of never returning?
I don't look at it that way. I'm sure we will all return one day. I don't think this is permanent.
That's Nazila Fati, former Iranian journalist whose book The Lonely War will be released shortly. And you can listen to a longer interview with her on our website later this afternoon.